On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus is here for a solo episode to recap a wild win over the New York Knicks, Kyrie Irving's heroics in the final minute, plus why can't this team make any free throws? There are too many turnovers and a few more complaints I have, and then looking ahead to the game against the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. My name is Marcus Barahal. Josh is traveling for work, so this is going to be a solo pod today. I'm going to be talking about all things Knicks and Nets from that wild game yesterday, and later on I'll preview the Nets game against the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow night at 6 p.m. in Memphis. But first, obviously, have to start with that incredible last-minute stretch from Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets after they almost gave that game away to the New York Knicks. They wound up winning it 113-109 thanks to a couple of huge shots from Kyrie. Brooklyn looked through three quarters to just be like clearly better than the Knicks in almost every respect, and they were kind of wiping the floor with them. It was a double-digit lead kind of from like the second quarter on through the third quarter, and even into the fourth it was still... Kyrie hit a mid-range jumper to make it 104-94, like about halfway through the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden, Wayne Ellington had his, to call it a revenge game is probably a stretch. He had like a revenge 3 minutes or so where he buried a few threes. And the Knicks came all the way back to take the lead. The Nets led by, I think, as many as 19 at one point. So great run from them, but also from the Nets' perspective, just... a lot of turnovers, a lot of missed free throws, and Kyrie Irving at the end of the day coming down court and just saving the team with those huge shots. There's been a lot of comparisons of that shot to the shot he hit in Game 7 of the 2016 Finals. It was kind of the same spot, the same move, and yeah, that's like what you expect from Kyrie. That's why you sign him. That's why you pay him the big money. That's also why you are willing to give DeAndre Jordan whatever it takes to, if that's like a tipping point to get Kyrie and Kevin Durant to come to play for Brooklyn, because just seeing him hit that shot and seeing the calmness and the confidence he had going up to take it, he wanted the ball, he wanted that shot. And the Nets did have that a little bit last year with D'Angelo Russell. You know, he raised his game, he raised his profile and became an all-star last season, but Kyrie is still on another level. Kyrie's an all-NBA player, and so making that leap from D'Lo went from like good to very good, whereas Kyrie is great. And that, to me, is the difference between the two players and why Josh and I both were so bullish on the Nets over this season and are pretty confident in them making it to the playoffs and making the second round even. So I know Josh was frustrated a little bit with that blown lead, and I was too watching it, but you just have to admire Kyrie and the shot-making and just like comparing him and D'Lo even more specifically. Like, you saw it a lot in the first half where Kyrie was very willing to drive and absorb contact. He got to the line and was 8 for 8 from the free throw line. So with D'Lo, it was a lot of times he would be patient on drives and he would come around the pick from Jared Allen or from a big man and then kind of probe for a little bit, take his time and either pull up for a mid-range jumper, which he did make at a really high clip, or he would kick the ball out or pass it or find someone on the roll, like things like that. But with D'Lo, he kind of plays a little bit more like Dinwiddie in that he, or not D'Lo, excuse me, with Kyrie, he plays a little bit more like Dinwiddie, where if he can get that head of steam, he's just going to go right in, like with no fear, with no abandon. And it's like, D'Lo is like on one end of the spectrum in terms of point guards who like don't really drive at all. And then the other end would be like a Russell Westbrook type who is just flying in sometimes to a fault where he gets out of control. And Kyrie has a similar, obviously no one's Westbrook with aggression, but Kyrie has a similar level of aggression getting to the basket, but he is just so under control. His footwork is incredible, and the touch he has finishing around the rim is obviously, it's one of one. He's the only guy who can do that in the league. So just seeing that on full display in this game, this is a game that if the Nets had lost, it would have been a crusher. Obviously, there were a lot of Knicks fans in Barclays Center, but I think it was closer to a 50-50 split than I saw a lot of people tweeting about on Twitter. Like, up until that run the Knicks had, it felt like a largely pro-Brooklyn crowd. There were a lot of Brooklyn chants when a couple charges were drawn, travels called, things like that. But down the stretch, it was definitely, you could see the Knicks fans starting to rise up. And then with Kyrie hitting those shots, everything, like, it wasn't like there were boos. It wasn't like the crowd got silent when he hit those shots. The crowd cheered again. It was sort of just like in that Lakers-Clippers game from opening night where both sides were represented, and it wasn't so much booing the opposition as cheering your own team. So I think both teams got cheers. Obviously, there are still more Knicks fans than Nets fans, and I kind of expect that to be the case. I mean, Kevin Durant coming back could change that, but I expect that to be the case for a long time. But that doesn't change what's happening on the court. And Kyrie said as much in his post-game interview with Michael Grady after the game, where he's saying, this is our home, this is our city, you know. And I think this rivalry, if you want to call it that, has kind of blossomed over the last couple of months because of both teams having two max slots and those guys, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, choosing to come to Brooklyn as opposed to the Knicks. And there was all that talk about KD, I think, on Hot 97 saying that the Knicks weren't cool, guys on the Knicks firing back at that. So it's definitely more chippy than it has been in past years, which you would expect. I think it is very similar to what's happening with the Lakers and the Clippers, where the Clippers have not had nearly as many fans as the Lakers, which I think is a fair thing to say. And now they get arguably the best player on the planet in Kawhi Leonard. They add Paul George, who's like a consensus top 12 guy in the league. And so now they're in a position. The only difference between that situation and this situation is that the Lakers also have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and the Knicks have Dennis Smith Jr. and Bobby Portis. So a little bit different, I guess, but my point is more so that the little brother, quote-unquote, team is kind of rising up and is trying to take a lot of the steam and a lot of the wind out of the sails of that big brother team. And I think both the Nets and the Clippers have shown that just being patient and not getting involved so much in that off-court stuff is what's going to drive free agents to want to play for you, and just building things slowly is what ultimately attracts those guys. And that's why KD and Kyrie chose to come to Brooklyn, because those young players that the Nets got, even though they weren't as highly touted, guys like Dinwiddie and Joe Harris, they've worked on their games through that system with Kenny and things like that. They've kind of become what you want if you're a great player. You want to go play for that team. So shifting gears to talk a little bit about some of the not-so-great stuff, because as great of a shot that was from Kyrie and as good of a win as that was, there were a lot of negatives also. The first half was great, but then once the third quarter and the fourth quarter rolled around, Brooklyn 6-for-14 on free throws in the third quarter, and then for the game, they missed 11 of them, and it was almost exclusively not Kyrie Irving, Spencer Dinwiddie, or Caris LeVert. Those three guys actually shot great from the free throw line. They were a combined 19 of 22, which means that everyone else on the roster besides those three was 4-for-12. So that's not great. The 26 turnovers is also not great, but a lot of that I'm willing to give somewhat of a pass to, because a lot of the turnovers were either travels, which it felt like there were 30 of them called in this game, or offensive fouls, which there were also a lot called. And then the rest of them, there were a lot of passes which were maybe overpasses, like trying to get guys involved. It was like selflessness to a point of selfishness, where everyone, I think, is trying not to step on each other's toes, trying to get everyone else involved. You saw that in game one with Dinwiddie throwing tons of lobs to DeAndre Jordan. We saw it with Garrett Temple coming around picks, trying to get him involved in the offense. And I think at a certain point, someone just needs to assert themselves and not worry so much about everyone on the team being happy at all times, because you can't overpass. And that's what we've seen as like the only weakness with that dominant Warriors team from the last few years, is that they would get a little bit pass happy and a little bit turnover prone because Steph Curry wants to throw a behind the back pass in game 7 of the finals. Not that this was anywhere near the same stakes, but it's that same thing of like, you want to be fun, you want to have fun, you want to keep all your teammates involved, and that's great, except for when you're throwing a pass that's like has a low probability of succeeding. So Houston is kind of like the other end of that spectrum, where they, at least in years, the last couple of years, they just don't pass. And so if you're not passing, it's hard to commit turnovers, because the ball is just in one guy's hands, and that guy is James Harden, and he's one of the best players in the league. So for Brooklyn, it's about keeping that ball movement that was so effective last year, but at the same time recognizing, like they did down the stretch, that you don't need to do all that. Like, Kyrie Irving is good enough to get buckets down the stretch, which is exactly what he did. And that was kind of a little bit of a problem in that Philly playoff series last year, where down the stretch they were overpassing. They would force feed Jared Allen. He would get stripped in the paint a couple times in that series. And so now that they have a guy like Kyrie Irving, who's a better one-on-one scorer than D'Angelo Russell, he can hopefully just initiate the offense himself. And we saw that in this game, just like as an example of what could be in the playoffs. And he's one of the clutchest players in the NBA, if not the clutchest. Hitting that shot in Game 7 of the Finals is just still one of the greatest shots of all time, up there with like the Ray Allen shot for the Heat against the Spurs. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the turnovers don't bother me as much as the missed free throws, but the turnovers, I guess it's because the turnovers are more fixable, I think. The free throws, I'm not really sure what the problem is there. They talked about on the broadcast, DeAndre Jordan has this whole routine where he started in Dallas where he just asks his teammates who they're guarding, and that kind of distracts him, and then he's able to make the shot. It didn't work in this game. He was 1 of 4 from the line, and no one really shot the ball well from the free throw line outside of those big three that I mentioned, the three ball handlers. So definitely you need to work on the free throw shooting. The turnovers, like I said, I think part of the abundance of travel calls and foul calls is just that the refs always, every year, seem to hamper on the rules in the first week or two of the season, which I get that they're trying to send a message like, don't do these things long term, like we're gonna call it, but we also know that they're not really gonna call it all season, and like at a certain point they're just gonna let things go because they want the game to flow, they want people to be entertained, and ultimately as much as this is about the competition, it's also about entertaining the fans. And so they're not gonna make all these calls later in the year, so I don't really get why they're so focused on harping on all these little rules or rules things, as Richard Jefferson would say. But yeah, so I guess it's just a matter of like adjusting to what the refs are calling in the game. And like, you could tell pretty early on that they were going to be calling everything. So from that perspective, I guess it would help to have somebody on the team, whether that's Kenny or whether that's one of the veteran guys like DeAndre or Garrett Temple or even KD, who was on the bench giving advice, just to be like, hey guys, like, I know they're making some bad calls, but they're making them consistently on both sides, so we need to adjust. We need to get better at that. Because the Nets had a ton of guys in foul trouble. Like, Kyrie and LeVert both had 5. DeAndre and Joe Harris both had 4. Dinwiddie also had 4. So it was to a point where if this had been, like, that game one and it had gone to overtime, like, the Nets could have been down to running things through Torian Prince or something. So obviously, not great calls from the refs, but you have to be aware that those are the calls they're making and you have to adjust. So that's my only note on that. The only other thing that I was interested in from a Nets perspective was LeVert not really playing down the stretch. And we saw this a little bit last year where, because the Nets had those three ball handlers, and last year it was Russell, Dinwiddie, and LeVert, you can't really play all three of them at the same time unless you want to be really small. And LeVert is kind of able to guard threes, but it depends on the matchup. So really, two of those three guys are going to be playing down the stretch in any given game. And in this game, it was Dinwiddie and Kyrie. And I think that was the right call because Dinwiddie was heating up. So hopefully that doesn't have any kind of like lingering chemistry effect with Karis, because the team chemistry looked great in this game. Theo was dancing. New addition Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot was getting involved. And even Kyrie, like when he was on the bench, was celebrating a lot of threes that guys were hitting. So the chemistry is good right now, for sure. Hopefully that can last. And my only concern with that would be, like I said, it feels like only two of those three guys can play at once. So if there's a game where Kyrie doesn't have it and Dinwiddie and LeVert are both cooking, is Kenny going to be able to sit Kyrie for those last couple minutes and ride the hot hand? Or is he going to force feed Kyrie and sit one of those guys when they're playing well? And does that disturb any of the balance of the chemistry? So that's going to be something to watch going forward. I think for right now, we're probably fine, but yeah, just something to monitor going ahead. And then just a couple quick notes from the Knicks side of things. RJ Barrett looked really good. Kevin Knox looked really good. It felt like Knox was not really involved down the stretch, and they were running things through Barrett, which seemed to be working. And I didn't expect Barrett to be that good. He looked really composed and collected, which is the biggest thing for me with rookies. Like, if they seem like they're hesitant or shaky, that's like a big red flag. And Barrett, if nothing else, looked confident out there. So that was really good. Mitchell Robinson was in foul trouble. This was kind of like both ends of the Mitchell Robinson spectrum, where he looked really intimidating on defense when he was able to jump up and block shots. He completely destroyed one of Joe Harris's, but at the same time, he had, I think, 5 fouls in like 18 minutes. So that's obviously not great. So, and no Frank Ntilikina. So there's a lot to complain about if you're a Knicks fan. Not going to talk too much about the Knicks, though, because the Nets have another game coming up. And that game is between the Brooklyn Nets and the Memphis Grizzlies. It's going down tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern in Memphis. This is an interesting matchup for Brooklyn. I'm really curious to see Ja Morant the first time Nets fans will get a look at him, unless they've been watching any of the first few Grizzlies games. But yeah, he's looked a little bit shaky in his first couple games, just still kind of getting his legs under him, I think. For a rookie point guard, it's like always tough because you're being asked to handle the ball so much and be involved so much, whereas like with a wing guy or a big guy who's a rookie, you can kind of drift in and out of possessions and you don't have to be locked in 100% of the time. But if you're the point guard, you have to not only take care of your own game, but you have to kind of facilitate for everyone else. So it's a huge burden. I'm looking forward to seeing what Morant does against the Nets' talented backcourt. And then from a big man perspective, Memphis kind of has a lot of guys there, and the Nets aren't the biggest team, which Josh and I have talked about. They've got Jaren Jackson Jr., they've got Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga, and they've got Jonas Valanciunas from the Raptors. So that's a really capable frontline rotation. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Nets match up with those guys, because they will play Triple J at the four. So does that mean Torian Prince is guarding him? That's going to be a real tricky matchup. But I think if the Nets' interior defense, if DeAndre and Jared Allen can lock in and can really defend those guys, I think Memphis doesn't really have much else that they can pivot to. Jay Crowder is going to be out there. He'll be taking some threes, but he's not the kind of guy who can like lift a team offensively to a win. So it's really going to come down, I think, to stopping Jaren Jackson Jr., who's been a net killer in the past, and then trying to limit Brandon Clark when he comes off the bench and he's going to try to provide a spark. That's going to be probably up to Rodion Skuruks to do some damage there. He had a nice first half, also, Rody did, in that Knicks game. And then in terms of the backcourt, Memphis has Ja Morant, like I mentioned. They've also got Dylan Brooks, one of the two Brookses that was rumored to be traded. He's in Memphis. And they've also got Tyus Jones, a favorite of this podcast. Josh and I both love his game for some reason. But yeah, Jones is an interesting player, but it would seem like the Nets still have the advantage in their backcourt. Obviously, Kyrie Irving is the best player on the court most nights for Brooklyn, but even with Dinwiddie, like, the Nets should be able to take advantage of this Memphis team, especially when things get to the bench and you've got guys like Kyle Anderson coming in. So I think that Brooklyn should be fine in this game. The only concern I would have is stopping Jaren Jackson Jr. and trying to limit his shot attempts even. Like, don't even give him the opportunity, because, like, it's similar when a guy like Patrick Beverley is playing defense. He'll try to just deny the ball, because the best way to stop someone from scoring is to not even let them shoot. So if they can limit Triple J's shot attempts to like that 10 to 14 range as opposed to like 18 to 20, I think that would go a long way, because they don't really have a ton of other guys who can score. So the offenses look great for Brooklyn. If they can clamp down on defense, this should be a pretty easy win. And then just going forward, looking ahead after that, next week they play Indiana and Houston. So two probable playoff teams coming up later in the week ahead. So definitely want to get this win to improve to 2-1, and then hopefully win a game or two coming up at home against those two teams. But we will be back. I will be back for sure to do another podcast. I'll probably do either another solo one, or I'll try to finagle some guest for this Grizzlies game recap. And then Josh will be back to talk about that Pacers game. So until next time, you can get the Locked On Nets podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, be that Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, I don't know, whatever you want to do, you do you. You can download us there, you can listen to us whenever you want, and all the Locked On podcasts. A lot of good content coming your way from the Locked On Podcast Network. John Hollinger and Nate Duncan have their new show. There's Locked On NBA. Josh Lloyd with Locked On Fantasy has been super helpful, I know, for me and Josh in terms of our own fantasy play. So definitely give those a listen, give all the Locked On shows a listen. And of course, follow us on Twitter. Josh is at jmbass_. I am at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. And follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Josh was live tweeting this Knicks Nets game from the podcast account. He's going to be doing that for most of the games this year. So if you want mine and Josh's instant takes, definitely follow us on there for that. I'll be back to talk about that Grizzlies game probably on Monday. And until next time, be well. Bye.